sights to show you.
May we begin, huh?
Oh, you were holding on to that. Were you sitting on that?
Maybe in the past 2 minutes.
Oh, you were like, I gotta think of a fucking pun.
Yeah, I that was the only one. There's literally nothing else came up.
Oh, yeah, because it's a terrifying movie.
Yeah.
May we begin. Jesus Christ, Anthony. Okay.
Maybe not, shit. Let's go. Let's fucking do it.
Let's go ahead and jump right into it. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible Peoples Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Yep, sitting in my bed, covered in a blanket.
Is it that cold out there?
Oh, I mean, it got warmer, but my apartment always takes 2 or 3 days to adjust to whatever temperature's outside. So it still thinks it's like Monday and really fucking cold.
Yeah, it has been cold. Mm-hmm. it's California standard cold.
Yeah, I was about to say, now it's cold for us.
Definitely California standard cold for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure they're playing without their shirts on in Canada somewhere. When it gets fucking 55 degrees.
On the East Coast, they're like, anytime, like, we're just like, oh my god, it was 55 degrees today. What the fuck? Springtime, bitch.
California.
Yeah, I'm not built for East Coast winters, and I don't ever want to be.
No. I am designed specifically for this. I agree.
Today, we are talking about a movie that I saw once and took a gamble on. I saw, I think, the last third of this movie back in 2015.
Wow.
And I took a gamble this week and was like, let's just watch it because I think it might be fun. And here we are. So I'm very excited to talk about it. Anthony and I have exchanged many a text about it.
Yeah, normally we keep ourselves in the dark, but immediately I'm just like, Alex, I'm scared. this is really disturbing.
Very, like, you're not a big emoji user. And the fact that there was like an emoji attached to your text of like, I am frightened.
Oh, yeah, no. It was a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah, like nothing. It was incredibly uncomfortable, and I, you know, we'll get into our thoughts. I don't want to spoil. I don't want to talk about it right up top. But we are talking about May from 2002. Very excited to talk about it. I know Anthony is too. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. As disturbed as this movie made me, whatever. I actually think it's such a good niche movie. I think it's good. It's just
freaky.
Fucked up. There you go. That's a better F word. It's freaky. it's fucked up freaky movie. And I don't know. Does IMDb summarize it? Well, let's see. So, a socially awkward veterinary assistant with a lazy eye and obsession with perfection descends into depravity after developing a crush on a boy with the perfect hands.
Yeah.
Kinda.
That's at least the first half an hour.
Yeah, it gets real disturbing. Like, just real, yeah. Anyways, this was directed by Lucky McKee, which just has to be a fake name. That can't be
real. It's his middle name.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay. Well, it was also written by Lucky McKee. Luck McGee. And produced by Marius Balchunas and Scott Sturgeon. So,
very good.
Those two guys, they did it. Starring Angela Bettis, Jeremy Sisto, Anna Faris, and James Duvall.
Yeah, his full name is Edward Lucky McKee.
I mean, I guess if you're going to distinguish yourself in Hollywood.
Sure. I mean, to be fair, I did think Lucky McKee was a woman.
I thought so too.
And then in my research, I was very disappointed because if this was made by a woman, I would have been way happier. But say lovey.
Yeah, I thought it was. Like, until right now. So, okay.
Surprise, surprise, motherfucker.
I'm like, well, that is some weird energy going into this one. So, yeah. January 13, 2002 is when this thing premiered at Sundance, and it made it a little broader on February 7th, 2003. So, had a hard time getting itself in theaters, clearly.
Oh, it gets worse.
Oh, Jesus. This was budgeted at a $1.7 million. That's, ooh. I mean, it's low budget, but still, that's... pretty good for an indie. And box office was fucking not the budget for sure. $634,803.
Yeah.
So
Britannia had thoughts on that. Once again, friends, we are recording remote, and my cats don't know how to act when it's just me recording in the living room of my, or the floor of my living room. So if you hear cat noises in the background, apologies. And if you hear squeaky door noises in the background, apologies on behalf of Anthony.
That's true. Or my roommate jerking off. But
great.
I'll move the mic if it happens, Alex.
We'll edit it out.
Yeah. No. That's the opener before we get to credits right
Please
there.
Please don't.
It's a weird movie.
It's a very niche.
Very niche.
Very niche.
And then up top, listeners, we've said this a couple times. I'm going to go ahead and give the disclaimer here. Movies like the Poughkeepsie Tapes, movies like, what was the other one we did? What was your birthday one? Martyrs.
Oh, Martyrs.
Movies like Compliance. These are really messed up movies. They're tough watches, I would say.
I like that you're putting this in the same ballpark as Martyrs and the Poughkeepsie Tapes.
Yes, it is. As a person who just discovered this movie and didn't watch the last third of it in 2015, I will say it's up there.
Interesting.
It's up there for sure.
I wouldn't go that far. Martyrs is really fucked up.
I would say it's below Martyrs for sure.
Martyrs. I would say maybe just a hair below Poughkeepsie Tapes. But also Poughkeepsie Tapes is really graphic. This is not a graphic movie. It's uncomfortable, but it's not graphic.
What? It's totally graphic.
The murder scenes aren't like super like gory. I don't know. I feel like it could have been.
They cut away, but when they show the close-ups afterwards, I'm like, oh my god.
Yes. I
don't know. There's a really disturbing underbelly to this. I would actually put it pretty equivalent to Poughkeepsie Tapes, just in terms of the heebie-jeebies.
Interesting.
The heebie-jeebie factor. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, what?
Your heebie-jeebie factor, or your heebie-jeebie radar, is very interesting to me. But this is a psychological horror film or psychological thriller.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and we're going to talk a little bit about another film theory book that I've picked up. Anyone who's been to my apartment knows I have a collection of horror film theory books that I love and cherish and reference sometimes for the podcast. But we're going to talk a little bit about The House of Psychotic Women. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, that's what the title was. Okay, that's the book title, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's super cool. So, as those of you who are probably very well versed in horror know, psychological horror aims to create discomfort or dread by exposing common or universal psychological and emotional vulnerabilities and fears, and revealing the darker parts of the human psyche that most people may repress or deny. This movie obviously is a fit for that. Hook, line, sinker, done.
See my disclaimer minutes ago.
Correct. So the genre sometimes seeks to challenge or confuse the audience's grasp of the narrative or plot by focusing on characters who are themselves unsure or doubting their own perceptions of reality or questioning their own sanity. Check! Characters' perceptions of surroundings or situations may indeed be distorted or subject to delusions, outside manipulations, or gaslighting by other characters. Emotional disturbances or trauma, and even hallucinations or mental disorders. Check, check, and check.
boy, is this it's a weird take on Donnie Darko, I will tell you.
Yeah, kind of. So, like I said, May does this in droves by making the viewer as uncomfortable as possible in as many ways possible. As social creatures with a modicum of human empathy, seeing someone exhibit antisocial behaviors despite meaning well can be incredibly cringy, to put it bluntly.
This is pre-office cringe too.
On to another level where the goal is to make you uncomfortable, to make you, I mean, for me, I had to pause it several times just because I get secondhand embarrassment like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
It was just, I had to pause it, and like, even though I was watching it on Pluto and there were like breaks, I still had to pause it.
Oh my god, those breaks came in handy so much though. I was like, oh, thank god a commercial.
Some of them were very like illy timed.
Yes. Oh, no, it was not a good job.
I would be like, what's gonna... Adam Brody.
Or they would cut into the scene a little more and then just abruptly be like, hey, by the way, here, check out these pads.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Another example of this would be Carrie. I mean, pretty much the perfect example, right? As outlined in House of Psychotic Women by Kyrla Jenis, I can never pronounce her last name, but being a teenage girl is hard. Being rejected as a teenage girl is devastating. And in May's case, being a socially stunted, unsure young woman trying to figure out our weird social rules, rejection might just make you a murderer.
Yeah.
And so... She goes on in House of Psychotic Women. She writes about the brilliance of May at the time as an early 2000s film built on the back of 90s films after a very tumultuous 1980s. So let's get into it. Horror was not kind to women in the 80s, as I think we've discussed.
Over hundreds of episodes, yes.
Many, many episodes. Saying, quote, the horror genre was swept up in an indie firestorm and having suffered a creative drought in the previous decade, repositioned itself as an area for political, philosophical, and sexual allegory it had been in the 70s. She does a really great job in this book, which House of Psychotic Women, I was telling Anthony before we started recording, is a autobiographical topography of female neurosis in horror and exploitation films. So it weaves her own history and her own trauma in with talking about horror films. So in the chapter that I read that talks about May, she's talking about her own experiences in high school and in group homes and dealing with rejection as like a teenager, and it actually brought back some very fun, not fun memories of high school and like middle school.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, that did happen.
I mean, there's a certain level, I think, of naivety that comes with when you go through that kind of, you know, when you're putting yourself out there as a younger person without ever having experienced rejection. And I feel like you tend to go 100. And when you're an adult, that's not the case, like, ever.
Right.
And the bruises aren't as bad at that point.
When you're young and you're still figuring out what's, like, acceptable socially and what people expect of you socially, it can be very, very awkward. And kids are mean. Like, I remember, because she mentioned it in this book, and I was like, oh, cool, I'm glad this, like, I wasn't just, like, the one fucking weirdo. But in the book, she mentioned a very specific experience where girls that she was friends with one day, the next day would fake notes from boys that she liked and put them in her desk or her locker. And it reminded me of this really weird specific experience where the same thing happened to me. Like, this group of people would basically try to be friends with me, figure out who I liked. And then one of them forged my handwriting.
Oh, no.
And wrote a note to the guy I liked. And this is in, like, seventh grade. So you think the world's gonna fucking end.
Well, at that point, too, it's like, I trusted you with that information and you, like, schemed.
Yeah.
Which is never good, no matter how old you are.
That's pretty fucked up. There was scheming involved. And this happened so many times, like, back and forth over the course of, like, a year. Because it's, you know, this whole school year. And I never learned. I always was just like, oh, you guys like me again. Like, and it's just like talking about how, like, when you're young like that and you don't, you take those social experiences and you kind of learn or kind of try to figure out what it means. And it can either be very, very harmful or, you know, you end up going to therapy and unpacking it later.
Yeah.
But in the case of May, because she was so isolated as a kid and her mom was such an overbearing perfectionist, right? Mm-hmm. She never had any of those experiences. So she gets to young adulthood where everyone kind of expects you to have had those experiences and to have that social blueprint. And she doesn't. And so that's why I think a lot of people are kind of drawn to her, because she's kind of weird, but then she's too weird and she's too much and she doesn't quite get it. And it's very interesting. And that's part of the reason that I really like this movie.
Yeah, I like it too. To me, that whole demeanor behind her, and it's easy to root for her because you want her to be better and like do better and have good things happen to her. And it's not, she's not in a world, it takes place in Los Angeles. So you don't want to be around these people. Yeah. I live here.
You don't want to be around these people.
You got a lot of sharks out here. And
yeah.
I feel like putting her in that kind of environment, it really emphasizes how drastic things can change, especially if you're missing information.
Agreed. And, oh gosh, that reminded me of something that I was going to say, and I totally just forgot.
Oh, no, my bad.
Oh, no, it's okay. Damn, what was I going to say? Anyway, no, it's a great movie for all of those reasons, and it taking place in Los Angeles, I do think, is just like an extra cherry on top of just the neurosis cake in her case. So the whole section in House of Psychotic Women kind of goes on to talk about May's fixation on perfection imparted on her by her mother. It gives insight, us as viewers, into her neurosis, seeing her social ostracization. It also gives us insight into her trajectory to, I mean, we'll get into it, but you'll see.
Absolutely.
Her relentless pursuit of perfection and demanding perfection in others in conjunction with her social awkwardness makes for a very tense watch in a way that I haven't really seen in other horror films. Like, by basically playing on our own social blueprint, like I said before, by us knowing that it's not socially acceptable, it makes it uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, but you can also kind of understand why she thinks she can take this path.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it all falls apart, you're like, yeah, you know what? We're seeing her learn. We're seeing her learn as it comes
along. Okay, so that reminds me of what I wanted to say earlier. You do kind of find yourself wanting to root for her or kind of at least teach her, right?
Yes.
And as the movie progresses, I notice in the very beginning, she can barely get a sentence out. She's like almost nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
And then towards the end, as things go hard left, she kind of grows into herself, even in a very fucked up kind of way, but she does.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like she's able to articulate her demands at some point, and then it goes straight to, I was going to say execution, but literal execution as well. So she's executing her plans at the very end. Which, I mean, the journey makes sense.
There's a scene where after Adam dumps her, like, the third time.
I know, right? It's like, do I want to fuck this crazy lady? I don't want to.
Yeah. Listen, Adam is a whole other, like, typical, like, Los Angeles. Like, I don't even want to get into it.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But anyway, there's a scene where Adam has dumped her for, like, the third time. She's sitting in a tree. She's smoking at this point. She's picked up smoking for a boy, which never do if anyone is listening and considering it, and reading, and she has this very plain, like, cool demeanor about her, and she's able to have an easygoing conversation with him, and I'm like, oh my gosh, is she, like, getting the social, like, back and forth of it, of what's going on here? And then, of course, she, like, rubs her face on his hand, and it's very, and then it becomes weird, and I was like, okay, progress, I'm proud of you. it's very interesting to see her progression, her personality grow throughout the movie.
They're like fucked up baby steps.
Very fucked up baby steps. As the movie progresses and you get to the end, it does pose an interesting question that House of Psychotic Women also poses, and I kind of want to get into that too before we move on to the movie itself.
Mm-hmm.
So in House of Psychotic Women, she says, quote, "Deviant behavior is not a meaningless pathology. It is a valid attempt to solve the problems fueled by a group or isolated individual," basically saying she's pathetically lonely. We pity her as viewers to the point of discomfort. And it's an interesting question because her character is so pathetic, I guess, and, like, quaint that we do kind of sympathize. At least I did, to a point.
I did, yeah, exactly, yeah.
I mean, the murder is a little much.
It's a little much, but she's mostly murdering, like, despicable people, which is kind of
also... Oh, my God,
also...
they're so... Everyone in this movie is insufferable.
I mean, dude, again, it's LA shit. These are West LA Hollywood fucking boys. I've seen these people, like, be at a bar and think they're hot shit, and they're, like, two of them. Like,
oh, man.
It makes me
Yeah,
so
if
mad.
You say nothing weirds you out and, like, a little bit of blood weirds you out, you cannot fucking hang.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're all bullshit. I see it.
But yeah, so it's an interesting question, and because I feel like this couldn't be a question or at least a thought provoked in many other movies where the main character is the killer.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least it doesn't provoke as much sympathy. Just my own two cents. But.
No, I mean, most killers in movies are, you know, they're male anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where I feel she has a very distinct journey that I don't think can be captured really by the way a typical, more studio film would try to do it. Like, they're just not.
Right.
Not possible.
And that is also part of the issue that I had when I was writing this episode, is I kept thinking to myself, what if this character was a man? Would I have as much sympathy if for, like, a completely socially ostracized, like, weirdo guy? And I feel like that's an unfair comparison, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to make that comparison into a microphone currently because I don't know what my thoughts would be, and I don't want to speculate out loud. But
to me, incels.
Yeah.
Just incels.
Just incels. Okay, mm-hmm. that's fair.
I think what distinguishes it is that May is, how do you put it? The patheticness is not rooted in anger, and where I feel like incels are more hostile, which is something mm-hmm. that May eventually becomes in a way, but there's kind of a philosophy behind it, like her search for perfection and things like that.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, incels don't bother with that shit. Like, I'm a fucking hotties, goddammit. You know, it's a different mentality, I think.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, okay. I like that. I think we can kind of leave it at that.
I'll throw it in there. Yeah, I'll throw it in there. And that's my two cents.
<Da-da-da>!
Anthony's two cents.
And so, moving on to the release and reception of May, I'm very excited. Because Anthony doesn't get to do release and receptions very often.
That's true. Oh, I get to read some Letterboxd shit?
Hell
fuck
yeah,
let's
you
go.
Do.
Let's do it and talk about the failure of this movie. So, May was given a limited theatrical release to 9 theaters in North America. And by the end of its run, the film grossed $150,277 during its initial theatrical run.
That's so sad.
Good title, though. And if you can't find a friend, make one. Again, if you've seen this movie, you know. Eventually, though, worldwide, it did make the more than 600,000. I'm not reading that whole number again. Worldwide
gross. Would
you
like me to?
Yes, please.
$634,803.
There you go. On its $1.7 million budget, which, holy shit.
That's so sad. Worldwide. Oh, my God.
And it made so much more worldwide than it did in America, which is crazy
to
me.
That's crazy. I also just like, why 9 theaters? Like, give it some more theaters.
To me, 2002, people weren't ready for this shit.
Oh, yeah.
This would make way more sense, like, in, like, 10, 15 years from when it got released, for sure.
If this had come out in, like, 2000 and, I don't know, 13, 14?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put Blumhouse on the front, and that's
maybe.
It. That's
I don't
it.
Know if Blumhouse would touch this.
No,
but...
no. A24.
Maybe.
A24, yeah.
Oh, I'd love to see A24's take on this.
It'd be great, I think, yeah. But of course, despite the film's very clear financial failure, May received favorable reviews from critics, and Rotten Tomatoes actually has it at a 69%. Woo!
Nice.
67 critics had given the film overall a positive review. So, with an average of 6.8 out of 10.
6.08.
6.08, that's right. It's you know, above middling for
sure.
If you want to
go up, it's 6.1.
There you go, a 6.1. We'll call it that. The site's critical consensus states that it is an quote above average slasher flick.
Would you say this is a slasher flick?
No, not at all. I mean,
okay. I don't
it has
think
slasher
it is
elements,
either.
But I don't think it is.
I would say this is a very very dark psychological horror film.
Yeah, a horrifying character study.
Yeah, it is like the coolest, most terrifying of character studies. I love it.
Yeah, definitely. But of course, critics praised the film for its unique feel while also complimenting its brutality through the eyes of someone who is so caught up in their own fantasy of sorts. And of course, Bettis's performance was very clearly praised.
Yes. Now, before we go on to this next part, which I'm sure will blow everyone's socks off, Bettis's performance is fucking fantastic.
It's really goddamn good. I'm surprised I haven't seen her in more, to be honest with you. This is a very good performance. Oh, she gave it her all.
Yeah, she did a really good job. I've seen her in other things. I've seen her in other stuff, but mm-hmm. she really was just so good in this. She did great.
I agree.
Yeah. So anyway, the next part I'm very excited for.
Oh yeah, our boy Roger Ebert granted the film 4 stars out of 4? Holy shit.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah,
he
buddy.
Fucking hates horror, by the way, just so you know, everybody. He hates horror. Of course, he called it, quote, a horror film and something more and deeper. Something disturbing and oddly moving. And characterized the denouement?
Yeah. The end of the movie.
Gotcha. As, quote, a final shot that would get laughs in another kind of film. But May earns the right to it, and it works, and we understand it. There you go, Roger. I think he understands his artsy shit, and he probably would have loved A24 stuff
had he made it through. I don't think he would have liked Midsommar.
I think he would have loved it.
You think?
Yeah, I think he absolutely would have loved it. Interesting. But hard to say. I think he would have admired Ari Aster's talent.
Think he would have liked Hereditary.
Oh, he would have loved Hereditary.
Yeah, I mean, everyone... Most people like Hereditary. I don't want to say everyone, but...
No, definitely not every... There's people who hate it fucking hate it.
Yeah, it's divisive for sure. Yeah.
But most people I've talked to, it scares the shit out of them, mm-hmm. which is great. Variety magazine critic David Rooney turned in a review that was more middle of the road, stating that the film was, quote, more successful when the title character finally embarks on her bloody mission than the dawdling build-up.
A dawdling build-up.
I like the build-up.
Well, listen, it's very well done, and I don't say dawdling build-up as, like, a derogatory. I just mean it's, like, it's just tense and it's uncomfortable.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's a squeamish movie without really, I don't know. There are instruments of being able to maim somebody, just being hovered around people for the longest time, and then when she finally fucking does it, the shit starts hitting the fan. We'll talk about it, obviously.
We're going to do a play-by-play because, shocker, there's nothing about this movie.
and they're always fun anyways. This is a fun one to play-by-play for sure. But Bloody Disgusting ranked the film number 17 on their list of top 20 horror films of the decade. 17's good.
Yeah.
With the article calling the film, quote, criminally underseen at the time of its release, the plotting itself manages to sidestep the usual slasher tropes as it slowly and inexorably unravels, all leading up to a quietly haunting conclusion that is as heart-wrenching as it is unnerving. Okay.
I feel like all the people who wrote positive reviews got the fact mm-hmm. that it's like it's sad and it's like it's hurt, like there's like a lot of hurt in this movie.
Yes.
And yeah, it's also tragic. Terrifying. Yeah, it's tragic, but it's also terrifying, and the people who got it. And I think that's why it became as culty as it was, because this went on to become 100% a cult favorite.
Definitely. And to me, even just looking at like video reviews and stuff after, like earlier today, I would say it makes me want to go back and explore a little more. Not immediately, but at some point I actually do want to revisit and kind of see why it's effective, because we've seen so many horror films at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Very few times am I just not gonna even like just actions and like characters' demeanor makes me not want to look at the screen. That's a hard one to nail right there.
It's we've watched at least 157.
There you go. See, at least.
At least.
Now, what the people want. Obviously, it's time. Good old letterbox time. Let's fucking
Yay.
Do it. So, May has a 3.5 rating out of over 18,000 reviews, cementing it as a cult classic.
Absolutely,
that is a letterbox cult classic right there. That's how you rate those.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ruspin with 3.5 stars. Quote, show and tell seems like a good activity to do at the blind children's take. Oh, I forgot they were blind when I first started playing out. I'm like, oh shit, that's right.
They're blind.
Oh, that was horrifying. Mm-hmm. Number one Bratz fan with 4.5 stars. Way to username there, buddy. quote, Jeremy Sisto's character does not fall in love with May after she serves him Gatorade in a wine glass. What a completely fucking unrelatable character.
Although you can kind of tell he's endeared.
Yeah, yeah.
If not, thinks she's a fucking weirdo, but he's kind of endeared, maybe. I think he just wants to fuck the crazy lady, but...
I think so, too. We've all been there, but a Gatorade in a wine glass to me is touching. You're like, oh, you're trying.
You're trying so hard. If someone made me box mac and cheese and put Gatorade in a wine glass, I would... It would be endearing.
Yes. Eva Z, with no rating, but touching review nonetheless. Quote, lovely small movie about a real loneliness, which is so seldom treated with this much care and attention on film. Jarringly ferocious montage pulls away at the threads of what might otherwise be a relatively unobtrusive indie comedy until the depth of our heroine's desperation has nothing left to hide behind. All the patchwork clothes and fake loves and affected cheeriness dead in the freezer with the cat. Really fucking sad and really fucking sweet. Can't decide which is more important. If you can't find a friend, make one. Oh.
I really like that review because I feel like it does very eloquently kind of summarize the movie.
I mean, it clearly tells somebody that was affected pretty tremendously by, and probably empathized a lot with this character.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, to me, again, we've all been there at some point, but I mean, not to this degree, obviously. But, like, to me, for some, it is like a movie that touches on human nature pretty well.
In agreed, it's
just
yeah.
a very disturbing way, very disturbing.
I mean, super disturbing, but I do think, yeah, there's a lot there that, like, I mean, the parallels drawn to Carrie and, like, that loneliness and that, like, or that desire to feel loved and cared for, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's why Carrie also stands the test of time. But obviously that one hit way earlier. So way earlier. And of course, to conclude, Elena with 3.5 stars. Quote, I will literally never complain about being touch starved ever again.
And that one made me laugh.
Yes. Oh, we've all been there.
Have we all been there? A lot of those the reviews were just like talking about being touch starved and being lonely, and all of them were during the pandemic, and I was like, oh man, we're all going through it right now. Yep.
18K, huh? Okay, that's a lot of lonely people on Letterboxd.
All the lonely people.
One.
No. Oh. Anyway, right. So yeah, that's the release and reception of May. So now we get to dive into the plot. Now, this is a question for later, so I'm just going to ask it now before we get into the plot. Would you suggest or recommend this movie to someone, a horror, like to someone in general, to watch?
I would recommend it to, no, I would not.
What about a horror fan?
Horror fan, I would recommend it, but again, with the cast. Caveat of you got to be watching some good fucking horror, or you got to have a threshold, something to get you, because to me this is it's a tough watch and it's really not for everybody. I can see people really being turned off by this.
Sure,
I personally again loved it, so we'll talk about it. But
a psychological thriller fan.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, okay. Definitely.
So those are your goalposts, and so if anything we've talked about so far is vaguely disconcerting, or maybe you're just like, I don't know if I could handle this movie. Maybe don't watch it. Maybe listen to the plot synopsis that we're about to go over and then decide if you want to watch it. Because exactly. I guarantee this play-by-play is not going to do the movie justice.
No. It will prepare you, though, for some really disturbing shit, which is gonna go down if you choose to watch it.
Sure. Yes, but mm-hmm. I think you should watch it. I think this is a exercise in your own discomfort. I think you should watch it. If you like horror movies. Like, if gore doesn't bother you, I think check it out. See if it's something that it can... I think it'll push your boundaries a little bit. And I'm all about boundary pushing.
Yes. It is a boundary pusher. I would agree.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So.
All right.
Let's dive right into it. May Kennedy... Kennedy? Is a woman in her mid-20s who suffered from a troubled childhood due to her lazy eye. She has a pretty, like, extreme lazy eye.
It's a pretty, it is, again, very distinctive lazy eye for sure.
And
of course, she has very few social interactions.
The beginning of the movie kind of shows her interactions, like, growing up, like, her mom being an overbearing perfectionist, and how to be perfect, like, she's trying to fix her daughter's lazy eye, and that causes her to have to wear an eye patch, and then the kids are just like, I want nothing to do with you, because you're wearing an eye patch. Which, again, kids are fucking assholes. Kids are mean.
I love how, though, the adults in this movie had the middle school demeanor, for sure.
Yeah. They're like, oh my god, oh my god, we can't do that.
Yeah, but I think starting from childhood actually was a good way to kick the movie off, for sure. Because, I mean, it's only brief. It's brief, and you know, it goes into, obviously, this other stuff here. So she does, of course, have very few social interactions. Her only true friend, quote-unquote, being a glass-encased doll named Susie, made by her mother and given to May for her birthday, with the adage, if you can't find a friend, make one. And of course Susie looks fucking terrifying.
Oh yeah, it's like the first doll that her mom ever made, which is terrifying as a concept. But also, there's a little moment here that didn't make it into the outline that I don't know if you picked up on either. May is, like, unwrapping her present, and her mom is just like, oh, you ruined it? Like, unwrapping a present? Like, there's a way to unwrap a gift?
I remember that. I'm like, bitch.
You bitch.
She's a fucking kid.
She's a kid, and obviously she's just like, oh, no, you fucked it up, basically, and, like, unwraps her present for her, because there's apparently a proper way, a pretty way, quote-unquote, I'm doing heavy air quotes, to unwrap a birthday gift. Anyway,
this is my moment.
Well, it gives you an idea of basically what she had to deal with, and then her dad is just there just like, oh my god, what have I done?
Yeah, he's like, oh shit, I produced this whole scenario.
Yes. So fast forward to the future, 1990s Los Angeles. May works as a vet assistant. Her optometrist fixes her lazy eye with glasses, and then in the beginning of the movie with contact lenses.
Yeah, and I remember I understand. I don't know. It was. I have a thing with contacts, so that already kind of just throws me off.
Yeah, contacts terrify me. I've seen one too many horror stories of, like, people with contacts getting too close to, like, open flames and their contact lenses, like, searing onto their, like, corneas, like, that kind of thing. I'm good.
I never heard of that one, but
sorry. Well,
that is a disturbing visual.
Yeah, right there. Like, I read that in high school. Like, someone went camping and got too close to, like, a campfire with contact lenses in, and the contact lenses, like, melted onto their corneas.
I just keep thinking of, like, bars I've went to with, like, fire pits where I'm just like, oh, I'm too strong. Oh, my God.
Oh, God, my eyes.
Oh, God. Pour alcohol on it.
And this is the point of the episode where we both agree we look better with glasses.
It's my look. I can't. Even if I got LASIK, which somebody told me it totally worked for them, and it was, like, 3 minutes.
Go ahead.
No, I would just wear glasses. Yeah. I would just fucking do it. I'm sorry. Well, like, it's part of my look.
I mean, sure. If I got LASIK, same. But also, the idea of getting LASIK just terrifies me. The idea of laying down, being awake, and someone shooting shit into my eyeball.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It just doesn't... I'm good. I'm fine. I don't want it. I'll just... have shitty eyesight.
Don't bode well for me either.
I'll be at a disadvantage. It's fine. I can't see for the first couple minutes of the day, but I don't want to see you anyway.
Sometimes it comes in handy.
I've seen enough.
Although it would be nice to not have a blurry... never mind. That's actually going a little too personal there. Anyways. That's why you're all up close. May becomes friends with Adam, a local mechanic. She has a fixation on his hands, again, which she considers to be the most attractive part of him. And they kinda start dating.
Heavy emphasis on the kinda.
Yeah, because it's clearly, like, obsession. And she makes her own outfits, and she's you can see she's taking some agency at a certain point because she is fascinated by this guy. This is before the scene when they are, or this is the scene when she sees him at the restaurant, right?
And he falls asleep. This is a bunch of, like, I think this is a hodgepodge of a bunch of different things, because she pretty much, she runs it, she sees this guy's hands and she's like, I like those hands. And she...
Yes, just like that. Hands!
Hands! I need them! no, because there's also this line where she says, so many perfect parts, but no perfect whole. And...
That's right.
And that's kind of the premise of the whole movie.
Yeah. And she recognizes him from the laundromat. That's typically where they have their interactions, correct?
Was it the laundromat?
Yeah, where they needed to get quarters and they were doing, like...
Is that where they first met? Okay, I might have just been, like, deeply uncomfortable already. Who knows?
Yeah, because they keep going back to that. That's typically where they interact.
Okay, so she starts pretty much stalking him, like, basically following him and, like, kind of bumping into him, but he's totally oblivious to everything around him. And then the scene where she follows him to a coffee shop and, like, is just, like, she's dressed up. Like, she's, like, trying to, like, impress him. And he, again...
Yeah, she's dolled up for sure.
Completely dolled up. and he completely is just, like, head in the clouds. Like, I'm smoking a cigarette. I'm reading a book. I'm stupid. And he falls asleep. And she, being a fucking creep, like, rubs her face against his hand. And then he's just like, hello? Like, again...
Oh. And idiot. She scurries away in the most uncomfortable fashion.
And she falls on her ass and just runs away.
Yeah.
And, because this plot synopsis does yada yada through a lot, we're going to unpack a lot at each of these for the next couple plot points. And then she finally, like, talks to him. And he, like, for some reason is, well, not some reason, I don't want to be totally demeaning here, but he's, like, endeared, right? He's just, like, she's weird, but it's kind of cute, so we're just gonna, you know, see where this goes.
He seems curious.
He's curious.
Yeah, he seems, it's like, oh, she is not normal, and, oh, maybe I can fuck. Like, that's it's a very basic premise,
No, you're totally right. This is this man's, like, Neanderthal brain just being, like, maybe I can fuck.
Maybe I can fuck the weirdo.
Oh, then, I hate this guy.
I don't have to actually worry about that until we stop talking. Yeah,
oh,
I know he's a
piece
of shit.
I hate this
guy.
He's so shitty.
He's that guy.
Yeah, he is totally that guy. So they kind of date. Like, he, and then she's weird, and she's like, I've never had a boyfriend before. And he's just like, never what?
We're skipping some steps here, lady.
I am eating chips in a car. Like, what's the deal here? So, simultaneously, while all of this is happening, May's lesbian colleague Polly, played by Anna Faris.
Yes, yeah. Very good, though, too.
She's so funny in this movie. She begins to flirt with May. One day, May remarks that Polly has a beautiful neck. During their weird flirtations, Polly gives May a pet Loopy. It says Lupe, but that's not right. It's Loopy.
Loopy the cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like, they have a very interesting relationship, because, like, it feels like May falls back on Polly, but, like, is still never really 100% into it at all.
She's just kind of just like, I mean, I'm down, I guess. Like, I sure, whatever.
Like, just roll over me and let's just fucking just go.
Like, she's just like, sure. Like, this is what I would define as, like, bisexual by circumstance. Like,
hey, I like, that's a good one. Okay, bisexual by circumstance. Oh, that's a good one.
Like, I've encountered this. Like, I know exactly who this person is.
Yes. Oof. Now, of course, May invites Adam to her apartment.
Your mic keeps cutting out,
and,
dude.
He shows. Oh, wait, the other way. Wait, so does this scene take place at her apartment or his?
It does. So she goes, so he blows her off the first time. So this is when he takes her to his apartment and there's the retractable knife and he's like, I'm kind of a weirdo. And I'm like, you're not a weirdo. You're a little bitch.
Yeah.
This guy drives me fucking nuts, like, in so many ways. Really, like, I've spent so long, like, too long at this point on dating apps, like, having to, like, swipe on these motherfuckers who are like, I'm weird, I'm creepy, I'm da 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 da.
My hair goes to my shoulders. They all have it. They all have it.
No, it's... anyway.
Wait. Yeah. It takes place in Adam's apartment, doesn't it?
It doesn't. They do that. They're, like, kissing. And then he's just like, who taught you how to kiss? And yes. She gets all offended. She storms out. That's when she hits the top of the May doll. Of Susie. And she's just like, who taught you how to kiss? Because the scene before that, she's, like, practicing kissing with her freaking dolls. Because, again... she's weird.
Yeah. And of course, ugh.
And then, so she's like, she calls him and is just like, hey, I'd really like to see you again. And, like, she's very awkward about it. And it's really, really, it's pathetic. It's sad.
That's right, because he leaves. That makes sense. Yeah.
And then she shows up at his house just standing outside. And he walks out and he's just like, May, what are you doing here? And she's just like, just standing. And then he's just like, how long have you been here? And she looks and she's like, since 2 and four or whatever, and basically, like, she'd been there for like 2 hours, and
it's like, you don't have to do that, like, da, da, da.
Yeah. And then she says something along the lines, or he says something along the lines of, he just finished putting together a short film from when he was in college or before he dropped out, and she asks if she can see it, and then this happens.
Yeah, and then after all that, there's a lot going on there. May invites Adam to her apartment, and he shows her the film, the said film, that, of course, he made at university, and it is titled Jack and Jill, and it's fucking stupid.
Fucking a tour over here. But no, yeah. So this is where we get the Gatorade in the wine glass situation. Like,
that's a little adorable.
It's a little adorable. Mm-hmm. So the film reveals the story of two young lovers who go on a picnic and end up eating each other. May becomes aroused by the cannibalism in the film because she's a weirdo, and I love her for it.
That and, like, again, very few sexual experiences, I would imagine. And then this is the foundation in which she gets all this stuff.
Right. This is, like, imagine this being the first kind of porn you ever saw.
She's like, oh, this is normal right
now. Right. And she immediately is just like, oh, all sex should be a blood-soaked experience. Like,
oh, yeah. Exactly as right here, because during an intense makeout session that they do have, she bites Adam on the lip and it fucking bleeds.
It's not that bad.
Yeah, well, he thinks he's getting laid, so that's the whole thing. Like, it probably was going to happen, but disturbed, Adam very abruptly leaves because he is just, takes him out of it, essentially. And May, of course, shouts at Susie and shoves her in the cupboard for this particular
transgression.
Transgression. There you go. That's a better way
to put it. Yeah, because she, like, kind of, like, blames her for it because, like, he is, like, a little weirded out by it, but it seems like he's, like, not totally, like, he's like, listen, I want to get my dick wet.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Like, I'll stay. But then he looks over and sees Susie just, like, looking like the fucking creep she is.
He's like, okay, this is a bridge too far. Let's fucking back. And he's
like, okay, I'm done. Yeah. I'm gonna go. And that's when, as he's, like, leaving, she screams, like, you were supposed to face the wall! And it's, like, this whole thing. Yeah. So, that was fun. And that's when I knew he was a little bitch.
Yeah. I'll talk.
Anyway, so after this, she begins volunteering at a school for blind children, where she takes a liking to a sullen young girl named Petey, who makes her a clay ashtray with the name May pressed into it. We kind of skipped it, but in the beginning, when she was talking to Adam, she saw these children in the park, the blind children from this daycare.
She's very captivated by one of them in particular.
Yeah. Also, this motherfucker goes to the New Beverly. If I ever see him, it's on site.
Oh my god, I want to go back, but you know, Omicron.
Yeah, right, because we're all struggling.
Yeah,
I miss it.
I know. But you know, again, while this happens, meanwhile, she actually starts giving in to Polly's advances, and they have sort of a little affair. And she, again, she does this out of, like, dejection.
It's just like, whatever.
She's like, yeah, she's got to get her fucking dick wet.
while this is all happening, Adam stops calling her, and she shows up And in a very sad experience that, again...
Very cringy. Very
cringy.
It's just,
it's sad. Like, he says that he is glad to be rid of her, basically.
Mm-hmm. With, while she's just waiting in the wings, like, eavesdropping, essentially.
Well, yeah, she shows up like she did the last time. Basically just waiting for him to open the door. And, it, like, just by happenstance. Which, again, it's just, like, not how it works, but...
She just don't get it. She don't,
no, she doesn't. She which is it. Sad, but, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Of course, she's devastated, and if she visits Polly. But she finds Polly with another girl named Ambrosia, furthering May's grief, of course, because this is kind of a fallback.
Right. And then Polly is just like, listen, can we wrap this up? Because I gotta tap this ass. Like,
yeah, she's like, no, this is normal. Like, I'm yeah, Lucy with Polly. And May's just like, it's middle school dating. She thinks she's in love. And, like, this kind of shit happens. And she's just going through it in much later and with the wrong fucking steps.
Which, and this is, it's so unfortunate. And you're right. It's middle school dating where it's just like every single person who's just like, you're just like, oh, well, we're dating. I guess I'm in love with you now because that's how it's supposed to go?
I have these emotions. You don't feel exactly the same thing. Oh, no. My whole world's dead.
Yeah. What's the point of living? Because I'm 14. So when even Loopy refuses to come near her, May becomes enraged at this and throws Petey's ashtray at her, killing the cat and shattering the ashtray.
And this is
where shit goes a little sideways.
Once she actually enacts violence.
Yeah. And kills her cat.
That results in death. Then it gets kind of crazy. Yeah. Because at this point, she becomes delusional and she starts believing that Susie, her doll, is in fact talking to her.
Through cracking glass, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and some good filming techniques, close-ups, and all the good
stuff. It's good.
Yeah.
So, after this, May kind of realizes that Susie is not the enemy here, and takes her to school, to the blind children's school, and tells the blind children that Susie is her best friend. The children demand to see the doll and struggle to take her out of the glass case. The case then shatters because it was broken already.
Yeah, and despite the kids being dicks, I mean, she has a pretty interesting demeanor when she talks to students. But of course, this all goes sideways because May and the children are then cut by the broken glass as they attempt to scoop it up. The ruined doll. May comes home fucking devastated, and the following day she meets a young punk played by Mr. Frank from Donnie Darko himself, right there.
Yeah, also, Dad, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Fucking Independence. See our Independence Day episode for that one. A lot of quotes. But of course, this fucking guy asks her if she wants to get some candy with him, and she accepts because she's still a child at heart.
It's more just like, he's just like, I'm just trying to be friendly. She does not admire him very much, but likes the tattoo on his arm. And while at her house, because I think he's on like MDMA or something.
He's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. He finds the cat's corpse and calls May a freak. Not the thing to call the mentally unstable person, but go right ahead.
This is very triggering statement. It causes May, of course, to break down, and she stabs him in the head, killing him. Of course, after putting much thought into her future actions, May claims that she actually needs, quote-unquote, more parts.
I love this. It just, like, kind of zooms in on her, and she's like, I need more parts.
To me, it's like, okay, I know what I like now. I like this shit.
And this is what I want to do.
Exactly. I'm just going to have to capitalize on this now. Yeah. I've already made this far.
Mm-hmm. So, on Halloween night, May dresses in a homemade costume resembling Susie, adopts a normal personality, kind of vaguely, sort of, if you squint, and goes to Polly's house, where she slits her throat with a pair of surgical scalpels. When Ambrosia arrives, May stabs her in the temples.
Yeah, and it's kind of a weird, like, I feel like May's first kill, first kill was the cat, but the first kill with the tattoo guy was very much out of passion, kind of sudden, and where this one, she is weighing her options. She's like, do I cross this line?
She's like, do I want to do this? And she's like, fuck yeah, I do.
And yeah, in the middle of the activity, she's like, oh, this feels good. And then fucking just
does it. Yeah.
Right there. Oh, is that my turn? Yes.
It is your turn.
Next, she visits Adam. And of course, his new girlfriend at Adam's house. May murders both of them with motherfucking scalpels.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. Oh, that's fun. And this is also when May kind of refers to Adam as hands. Like, she's just like...
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny.
You thought I liked you for you? Hold on. I was trying to learn you to get to these goddamn hands, son.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, after all this, her I guess, excursion for parts, at home, she designs her new friend, a life-size patchwork doll made from the punk's arms, Polly's neck, Ambrosia's legs, Adam's hands, his girlfriend's ears, and Lupe's fur for hair.
Oh yeah, and it looks weird.
Yeah.
it's actually there's nothing that looks like it. It's just its own weird
hodgepodge. It's an amalgamation of body parts. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's fucking disturbing.
I love it.
Yeah. But of course, using the broken remnants of the May ashtray to form an anagram. She names the doll Amy.
Aw, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
So she realizes, after building Amy, that she has no eyes and cannot, quote, see her. So she gouges out her lazy eye, crying in pain and bleeding. She puts the eye on Amy's head and begs the doll to look at her and to see her. The most heartbreaking, like, last 30 seconds of the movie.
Oh, my God. It's a lot. That part, I was like, I knew it was going to happen because the cold open was essentially her in the middle of this process.
Oh, yeah. The cold open is her stabbing her eye out. So we knew it was going to get to this point, but...
Yeah. To me, I thought it was going to be very different circumstances. In this, it's more tragic than anything. And then it becomes very disturbing. She collapses on the bed beside the doll and caresses it. Her creation comes to life, but briefly, and brushes her face affectionately with Adam's hands.
And she smiles, and cut to credits.
Cut to credits. And it's such a weird, slow hand gesture with a very, very much like, what do you call it? Decaying body parts just going towards it. It is disturbing. Like, it's a really disturbing.
Yeah.
But the journey itself, like, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It weirdly makes sense. Yeah.
So that's the movie. You guys, I hope you can hear the smile in my voice.
Yeah, and the just the shivers in mine because it's cold and because this is scary.
I wasn't scared as much as I was like uncomfortable. Like this movie did not scare me.
It I would say uncomfortable to the point of me looking up at the screen and be like, am I going to be able to watch this happening right now? And then sometimes not. And then sometimes not.
Well, so your reaction, okay, so we're jumping into discussion. Thanks, everyone. So one of the things that I was concerned about is because I had iPhone watched this movie in the sense that it was playing in the background one day and I was on my phone the whole time.
Yeah.
When I watched it, and I just, like, the last third really sucked me in, and that's why I was like, we gotta cover this movie. It wasn't, we gotta cover this movie, it was more like, what's a horror movie where May is the main, or a female name
female
is,
character. Yeah.
Is the title. And I was like, we could do May.
I'm glad we did. But, yeah, no, continue, please.
Oh, no, okay. I was just going to say, like, because I didn't remember a shit ton of it, and you were freaking out about how fucked up it was, I was like, oh, my God, I totally have to have a backup. So I totally had a backup, just in case. And you were like, no, we're fine, we could cover it. But I was just like, I don't know, because you keep saying you have to look away. Isn't that bad? Like, I was so worried that it was going to be, like, bad, like, not like creepy bad, like, I mean just like shitty bad.
Oh, but you know, I'd still want to cover that anyway. But at the same time, no, it was more like it's affecting, I would say is the way to describe it.
Affecting. Okay.
It's super affecting. I mean, if you have any kind of empathy in your heart, you're gonna have an empathy for a very, very sad set kind of character. May is definitely that for a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
For pretty much the entire movie. And it to me, it's such a unique tale. It's not like any other horror movie I've really seen. And that also creates a discomfort because you don't really know what you're getting into from scene to scene, which is crazy. I'm surprised. This predates Donnie Darko. It's around the same time as Donnie Darko. I'm not sure. But it kind of has similar vibes, but yeah, in a much more gruesome kind of way.
Donnie Darko came out the year before this.
Yeah, okay, so it's in generally a similar vein.
Well, also, yeah, very similar vein, but also Donnie Darko takes place in the 80s and this takes place in the 90s, so
yeah,
spiritually similar.
Spiritually similar. I personally enjoyed the movie. I was captivated by the movie. Very, very captivated by the movie.
Well, you keep saying, you kept throwing the I loved it around a couple times, so I'm happy that you enjoyed it. I mean, as much as it is to be enjoyed, I suppose.
Yeah. I wouldn't call it an enjoyable movie. It is definitely an experience, but I think it has got something profound to it.
There's
something really profound about it.
There's something very emotional to it. Like, I feel like it speaks. I mean, everyone at some point has felt lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And this takes that feeling of, like, just, like, despair and loneliness to such an extreme level that I feel like, yeah, it's very impactful.
Impactful, yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I really liked it. Like, I was very impressed. I thought it was very, I think emotionally evocative, I guess, is how I would phrase it. The directing didn't, like, take away from the story. Like, it was very well done.
Yeah, I would say that, too. It wasn't in your face and like, yeah, here's a fucking movie.
Well, like, it also wasn't, like, overly artsy. Like, I feel like Lucky McKee had the option to make it very, like, or he could have, because I think this is his first, even it's indie, but this mm-hmm. is his first feature-length film.
Okay.
I think, if I remember correctly. And so I think he could have gone the route of making this way more artsy. Like we said before, A24 would have a fucking field day with this movie.
Oh my god, absolutely.
But it wasn't. Like, it was very... it definitely had an indie 90s soundtrack, for sure.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I think it was delivered well. The story was delivered well.
Yeah, to your point about the direction, I think he replaces it being artsy with being grounded.
Super grounded.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that it is so grounded and like so Los Angeles, to be honest with you.
So Los Angeles.
So those two things, if you have any kind of experience with the city or you know, just media that takes place in the city, like it it's very affecting. Very much gets you. And I mean, to me, that's what makes it captivating. And hard to watch, but hard to look away.
Agreed. Absolutely. So, I think we've kind of touched on this, but do you feel like there is a protagonist in this movie? And if so, who would it be?
It's May.
It's May.
it's May based on the fact that everyone around her is genuinely shitty. And
God!
Yeah, she's genuinely not shitty, but her circumstances... turn her genuine nature into something that is terrifying.
Yeah. So. This is such a good character study.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. It really is. And then also all, like, it's so many of these characters are so Los Angeles and it's painful. It's like the bad side of Los Angeles.
It's seedy.
Seedy, yes.
Yeah, she is an innocent person in a very seedy circumstance, and she is able to beat all of them because at the end of the day, like, there's no ego to her.
Yeah.
And that's all they are, and it really kind of, it's a flip of the script.
And that's why I think Polly and Adam are both, like, two sides of the same coin.
Yes, definitely.
Polly, even though, like, she kind of seems to genuinely... appreciates May's strangeness. She's kind of like, I don't appreciate the tropes that are kind of laid out in this movie, but she kind of, the vibes that I'm getting is she just kind of is just like a flirt, so it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And then
she can get what she wants whenever she knows that.
Exactly.
She knows that. And she lives that way, which May doesn't understand that.
No, she doesn't. And she doesn't understand. And I think she kind of, I don't want to say took advantage of May's innocence, but I think she kind of did. When she, because May definitely has that like innocent mentality of like, oh, we did this, like that means you're my girlfriend now, or that means we're in love, or that means that we're X, Y, and Z, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which obviously is not the case.
Yeah.
And then Adam is the, I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm going to manipulate the situation to get what I want.
Yep.
And yeah, it's two, they're two sides of the same coin. Even though I would say Polly might be arguably a little bit more well-intentioned than Adam.
Yeah, they're definitely id-driven.
But yeah, id-driven. Yes, absolutely.
Id-driven with a but adult, so they mm-hmm. kind of know how to get what they want out yeah. of that one.
Yeah, that ego is putting in a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
So we both discussed a lot of discomfort with this movie before we recorded. What was, because for me, I feel like we kind of found certain things uncomfortable, but they were different. So I was wondering what was like really the most uncomfortable thing for you, or like what was the uncomfortable experience?
I mean, honestly, I think May's earnestness being taken advantage of, it was really hard to watch.
Okay.
It was actually really, really hard to watch. And there was like, it's not like there's retribution when she starts resorting to stuff that results in graphic violence. Like it that also feels like, oh my, like she's definitely overcorrecting in a lot of ways, which is in character. It's totally in character that she would take it too far. But to me, the moments of cringe are just too much.
It's a lot.
Yeah, and the fact that it's paired by it's a very dark kind of undertone and then murder. And then murder, yeah. So when you put all three of those things together, little interactions, like just her, even at the coffee shop, putting her face in his hand, escalates.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking also, where, yeah, agreed. Yeah,
yeah, it builds off each other. And to me, that's what makes it fucking terrifying, because you don't want it to go where it's going to go, and it goes further than you thought it would.
Definitely, yeah. I think, yeah, I agree. It pushes that envelope, for sure.
Yes, definitely.
For me, I think similar scenes, but yeah, just those, like, social awkwardness to an extreme, to the point of cringiness, is just like, I was just like, oh, this is hard to watch. Like, that's the point where I was like physically uncomfortable.
yeah, same here. So it was too much.
Or the scenes where she would like do something that I knew was going to like make things even worse than they were. And like that kind of stuff where I kind of saw something coming, where I was like, I gotta pause it. I gotta like emotionally prepare for this.
Right?
So I guess it was mostly the same stuff, but it just kind of slightly for different reasons. I don't know.
Yeah.
I also just like, I went to school, like for people who grew up really, really isolated. Like I went to school with people like this. Like there were a couple people in school like this where it was just like, people were really mean.
They
high schoolers are mean.
Yeah, that and selfish, and you kind of definitely see it in that, in just the way they interact with how they kind of like treat May sort of like a prop, or you know they're like, oh, she didn't really have feelings, or if she does, she's just kind of weird, but like don't really take her seriously. We can just do whatever we want. Precisely. And May's like, I am a fucking person.
Yeah,
but I, you know, but she doesn't articulate in that way, obviously, but her actions definitely.
Yeah,
do
and she doesn't quite realize like. She's not there emotionally. Like, she's still, I don't know. Like, she's emotionally stunted.
Yes.
So we already talked about whether or not you'd recommend this movie. I think if you're a horror fan, check it out. Mm-hmm. How are you making your own best friend?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, what hodgepodge of stuff do we do here? Okay, cool. I'm trying to think. All right, so how am I making my best friend? So I got to target people who I think are fun. Let's see here. Damn, that's a tough one. You know what? I got it. I got it.
Okay.
All right. We're going to do Tom Holland's upper torso, Andrew Garfield's face, and Tobey Maguire's just that ass. They just put all of them together.
Wow, that's a different
Spider-Man. That's movie. My best bro. That's my boy. I mean, he's got to be his. You know what? We can't just the ass part. Let's put Andrew Garfield's legs, so he's like a taller person. Again, I think as my wingman, that person will help me out quite a bit.
You think would help you out as your wingman?
I'll just prop him up. People will be drawn to him. Like, yeah,
he's kind of quiet.
You know, he doesn't really talk that much. Yeah, but I can definitely help you out with that one and like really get to him. So yeah, we're gonna go with the Garfield and the Tom. I think all together.
Okay.
As a full package, would make a great friend. At least a great wingman. So yeah.
Sure. Okay. Wow, that's way more creative than mine.
What was yours?
Mine was literally just like a pillow with like a broomstick in it, just so I had someone to cuddle.
Oh my, you don't do that normally? I do that all the time. Are you shitting
no,
me?
No, dude.
How many broomsticks I've gone through?
No, do you know how many pillows I have on my bed? Like, I make a cocoon of pillows. Yes. I'm just like, I need something to cuddle.
Oh, me too. And the thing is, like, I got two long pillows on each side, so if I need to, I just, oh, it's a new one. This one's colder than that one, so I feel better now.
That's funny. You're just like, oh, which one do I want to spoon tonight?
Yes. That's a good question. I like that one.
Yeah. Well, I have a follow-up, which is equally ridiculous and possibly, keep it maybe PG-13. Someone is using a body part of yours for their weird Frankenstein monster. What is it?
It's definitely not my eyes because my vision is terrible. So that is out of the question. My legs are also short because I am a tiny Mexican man. And my elbow's all fucked up, but they're double jointed. So maybe my elbows. So I think they're using the elbows.
The experience of having double jointed elbows. Okay.
I think it'll take them a long way.
We'd make up the arms because I was going to say shoulders. I have great shoulders, and every time someone tried to like use it against me in high school and said I had linebacker shoulders, I would just like fight the urge to shoulder check them because I have very strong shoulders.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. See, I feel like mine are a little broad, but I'm such a like twig kind of dude. Like it doesn't really come out that way. But I also have a very long neck. So you know what?
You do have a long neck.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I'm 5'6", but my shoulders are 5'4". like a 5'4" man. But I just have a long neck that makes me 5'6".
That's it. Neck.
It's because of my neck. That's what extends my height.
You and me together will just have a very strong, robust shoulder. Like arm and shoulder.
We're going to have a bronchiosaurus of a person, I think. That's how that's going to work,
it's
for
true.
Sure.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I have long arms. Yeah.
It'll work, I swear.
I think, you know, between the two of us, we'd be a very weird Frankenstein monster. But whoever, you know, don't kill us for your friends. Just befriend us.
Exactly. But, you know, if you want to include James and Phil in here, James's head is gigantic. That would be great. And then Phil's hands for the gestures of cinema.
The cinema gestures.
The natural gesture. If we get all of that, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Legs we'll figure out.
We'll figure something out.
Oh, Andrew Garfield. Okay.
Andrew Garfield.
Yeah. That
together.
Way. He's back.
He's back. Because we're friends with Andrew Garfield.
Yes.
God. But then our body parts would be attached to James's head.
Fuck, that's terrible. You're right. Let's rethink it. I don't know.
let's workshop this a little more.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was our fun questions to lighten the mood from this very intense conversation. Do you have a kill of the film?
Oh, Anna Faris.
Yeah.
Polly. I think like I said earlier, there's a sensual nature to it. There's definitely a line crossing that happens. But I guess it's kind of graphic, but it's also... It is just to me a very transformative moment for the character and my kill of the film for sure.
I would say Ambrosia because she's such a bitch.
Yeah, well earned kill for
sure. Yeah, seeing her just get stabbed in the fucking temple with a fucking scalpel. Oh, it was so satisfying. She's such a bitch.
Definitely, I agree.
Yeah. Speaking of scalpels, let's wrap this up. Rate this movie out of 5 scooples to the eye.
Scooples. Oh, I was going to bring that up. All right. All right. So, you know what? Make it a 4.
Okay.
I'm giving it a 4. I actually was very impressed by this movie, despite it disturbing the shit out of me. But I think if you're going to affect me that much and still come out with me thinking it's profound as hell, it's a 4. I'd say a 4.
I agree. I'm going to give it a 4.
Hey, we are merging on... Remember when our ratings were drastically different?
Very, yeah. We need to disagree more.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, we've been doing this for a little bit.
True, but we need to disagree more.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there'll be something.
Oh, I'm sure. I can
think. There'll be another Akira.
There'll be a no.
Oh, poor Phil.
Oh, man. Yeah, I would say 4. I was thinking about it as I was watching it. I'm like, it's not a 5. It's not a 3. I'd say this is a solid 4.
Yes.
It's very uncomfortable. Like, again, any movie that forces me to pause it several times, like, it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's really good. But also, you know, Roger Ebert gave this a 4 out of 4. Like, even though he was pretty inconsistent with his horror movie ratings, he really liked this one, so.
Yeah, he still understands good movies.
Yeah. He knows it when he sees it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that, I think, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
No, I will watch this again in a couple years and then probably like it more.
When you forget how deeply uncomfortable it made you.
Yeah, I will recommend it to somebody thinking they can handle it and they will not be able to. And that's totally
Oh my
fine.
Gosh, it'll be like VHS when you watch the...
No, let's not bring up the past, Alex. Yes. Watch it with a lady.
Jesus. Oh man, you were deeply uncomfortable, huh? Mm-hmm. I love that story. It's so funny to me.
The most uncomfortable cuddles I've ever had.
Oh, I bet. I bet. Anyway, guys, that is it for this week. That was May from 2002, written and directed by Lucky McKee. Next week, yes. Anthony.
The lady train continues
the
with
lady
a
train. The lady.
That's a weird way of putting that. Actually,
it's
okay,
a very weird way.
That was not intended the way that it probably would be interpreted normally. The lady. Oh my god.
Yeah. That sounds okay.
The other one is niche. It's well, it also got pretty popular. It stars an actor we have not covered yet. Oh. He has not been in any of our movies yet. He is a crazy motherfucker, and I can't wait. It's based off another lady's name, and it is
pretty effects driven. I'm so excited. People have been trying to get me to watch this movie for fucking ever.
Yeah, it's an effects driven scary epic, we'll say.
We will say really a scary epic. I'm stoked to cover this. I'm excited. I've never seen it. I know next to nothing about it.
Oh god. Okay, well, you got a big TV, which is perfect.
Yeah, so that's what everyone
join us
me. Join us next week for that. Sure. Yeah. It will be delightful, I'm sure. Let's see. If you like what you heard, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes and now Spotify. Thank you so much to everyone who has already done that. Spotify just introduced a new rating system, so now you can leave us reviews there. And if you feel so inclined, you can also write us a review on iTunes.
That's right.
And if you feel we deserve a couple bucks for what we are doing, we also have a Patreon. We are at patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod. And you can find us on all the social medias at on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Horror People Pod. And we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. Mm-hmm. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. So feel free to check us out there. I don't really know what I'm up to at this point. I made a list of TV shows and movies.
That's right, you
and
did.
I've been working through it. I've been working through Demon Slayer, Book of Boba Fett, The Witcher. I'm just catching up on everything because I feel like I've kind of fallen behind.
And I'm on the search for whatever chicken sandwich will replace the disturbing mess that I got at Church's Chicken. It's fucking gross.
Holy
Don't ever go there.
God, that looked gnarly.
It was so bad.
So, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us this week. Until next week, if you can't find a friend, make one.
That's right. And then, you know, based on that advice alone, like, don't try to disturb Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, or Tom Holland. They need their body parts. They're actors.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
All that. Yes, bye.